If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Flores
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thanks to Mucinex, I'm here with Dr. Drew in This Life.
Gather round.
Gather round the iPad.
Okay, there we go.
I can't even think. I'm on all kinds of medicines.
Don't even say that around me, Bob. It makes me nervous. But remind everybody, a little bit of business. Get out of the way. Don't forget our Hydrolite friends. Click through the banner at drdrew.com. Use that code drdrew18. You get 30% off. And that, of course, is a hydration product that I cannot speak highly enough of. And our friend,
if I use Hydrolite,
it would
with
help
this
you right
horrible
now.
Chest
it
cold?
Would help you. Well, Susan will get there's some right over there. I'm going to have you use some, okay?
It won't make more snot?
No, it doesn't work like that.
Okay.
No, you want to keep volume.
I have all
please.
Kinds of scientific things volume that make no sense.
Also, our friend at Tox Protect, the Genotox, it's a cheek swab, so you can check the DNA and compare it against the urine toxicology, so you know you're getting that person's urine. And our friends at True Niagen, which is a product that...
How great of a thing is that?
An ID product that I take myself. So there.
You know what? If that product existed when Tom Sizemore was going through parole, he'd be in prison for life. Because he was given somebody else's urine.
The Wizinator.
Yeah. Legendary thing.
We'll tell people what that was.
Do you remember that I wrote this book?
Well, okay. No, that's,
all right,
that's
so,
what made me think of it.
That means,
the woman who brought you the Wizinator biography.
Hey.
Anna David is our guest. She's a New York Times bestselling author. She has written many books about sex and relationships and recovery. She currently runs Light Hustler, a company that offers writing and performing workshops, ghostwriting services, and accountability group.
Yeah, we got that. And a podcast, a Light Hustler podcast, which you have been on
yes.
and Bob has not. But it will happen.
And Anna speaks all over the place. You can follow her at annadavid.com or at annadavid, two N's in Anna.
Anna B. David.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Mm-hmm.
That's confusing. And the website, though, is Anna David.
Yes, okay. It is confusing.
Yeah, that BD, my eye doesn't pick up the two together. It's weird.
Look at what's coming in, Drew. You're Valhalla.
My coffee. I'm fantastic. I'm so excited. But let's do a little
Don't talk. Help her, Drew.
Let's do the show here. I'm doing a little – let's do a little size war for a minute, shall we?
Oh, yeah. So having you, every time I see you,
that's
I
all
think,
you think of
our buddy.
Yeah, same
and,
with you.
And, you know, I never got to see the Wizinator, but I heard all about
so
it.
So you buy a fake penis that has a bladder on it that you can use.
And he got away with it for 2 years, correct?
Yes. And the crazy
and
thing.
And they sell them, they sell skin tones. You match your own skin tone
I know,
to the
but
right
I,
Wizinator.
But I don't think it's for what Tom used
yes,
it for,
yes,
is it?
Yes.
Oh, you thought it was a sex thing?
No. Well, yeah, you never know with him.
No. No, it has a bladder.
What if dual purpose?
No, it has a bladder, so urine comes out of it.
But didn't he invent it?
No. It's been around for
well, a while. Well, I'm so swayed by Tom. I'm so codependent with Tom.
Yeah, me too.
It's crazy.
You want to know who's
he
not
he asked
me.
To have it made.
No, it he purchased it. I think you can get it online.
You can, yeah.
And
do parole officers know about the Wizinator
now? I
think
thanks to Tom Sizemore, they do.
Yeah.
He brought some great publicity to that device.
So, Drew, you know, put it in Drew-like digestible
what
thing
is it?
For the audience.
It's
the
it's
Wizinator
a,
that Tom did. He got away with it.
It's a fake penis that you can match your own skin tone to online, and it has a urethra that emits urine and a bladder.
Oh, my God.
And so if somebody needs to observe urine, you can get by an observed urine, and you put somebody else's urine in the bladder attached to it, and that's how people get...
And you wrote this man's biography.
And I'm going to be honest, at your birthday party, Drew, I saw him across the room, and I ran.
Was he at my birthday party?
Yes!
Yeah.
Yes.
Why didn't I see him?
You didn't see a lot. You were on stage for 5 hours.
Was Sizemore at a birthday party? Oh, Tom Arnold was there.
No, Sizemore was there. They are not the same person. Yes.
You sure you weren't?
I'm 1,000% sure because...
He crashed it.
I didn't invite him.
He was there.
You're kidding.
You know, there was little weird pockets at the birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Anderson and Mike, Psycho Mike, all stayed in that back corner.
I wish I'd seen him.
All your groups of friends were in different parts.
How'd he look?
He always looks the same.
No, Sizemore.
Yeah.
You're kidding
me. I wouldn't
say he always looks
the same. Did you talk to him?
No. I saw him.
How weird. Yeah. I didn't even see it. Well, I was a little busy. But
I follow
him
on Facebook.
Oh, I'm going to have to call him.
And
or find out how to get in.
I was having all kinds of codependent moments.
Jason Patrick looks a little bit like...
Jason Patrick?
Yeah, he was there.
Okay, that guy I haven't seen, not that I know him since
he was actually on stage with me.
He was. Okay, there were so many amazing people there that I got distracted.
You don't know.
At times.
It went on for 5 hours. Yeah. People came and went.
I know.
The food was great. I was eating.
Good. Did you have a good time?
I had an amazing time, of course.
That's always important.
This is what I'm going to say about Tom Sizemore and that book is that.
That book.
Well, it is difficult. When you interviewed me, you say, I don't even know what the truth is. Can you help me out with some of the truth?
That's Tom
in a nutshell. That's what's great about him.
It's not great when you are his biographer, I will tell you that. And most of the people in his life that could corroborate everything were not on speaking terms with him.
Oh.
So I basically was like making amends on his behalf in order to get people to talk to me because because everything's a half-truth.
I think it's like even worse than that. I think it's a riddle wrapped inside a half-truth. Right?
I think you're right.
For one thing, he always says I was his drug dealer. No, I kind of knew him at the Viper Room. I never really...
Oh, I heard an elaborate story about you selling
where I was
drugs.
Selling drugs to him.
For years, according to him.
I've not known you to be a big...
I don't. I can't hold on to drugs very fast enough to sell them.
Did you sell them, or did you just said, "Here, you want some?"
I gave him some. Yeah, it was back in the day when I had a lot.
Is that considered being a dealer if you just give somebody drugs?
It's not exactly.
I don't think so. Not the dictionary definition, anyway.
But it was only. You got to understand, the Viper Room, the glory days of the Viper Room, only lasted like 5 months because then River died in October of '93. It opened in summer of '93.
River Phoenix.
So that part of Tom, what he's talking about, is just a couple months where everybody had drugs and everybody's doing drugs.
Whatever.
You know.
And everybody was loaded. So who the hell knows what the hell the truth is? So,
but
you know
I wish I got some money somehow. I was kind of homeless.
But I get the feeling. But you and I love Tom Sizemore.
I love him.
I get the feeling. Anna doesn't share.
No, she does not care for him.
I'll tell you two things. The book I titled the book by some miracle I made it out of there alive because that described my experience doing the book.
It wasn't Tom's
experience. Everybody that I was talking to the whole time is like, it's too bad you can't write the book of writing what that book is like. Because I would show up and he'd be like sweaty and like prostitutes running outside and he'd be like I was working out. I'm like, I don't care what you were doing. And then the other thing, and this is true, and Drew, you will appreciate this because it is PTSD related.
Uh-oh.
For 6 months afterwards, I couldn't walk. I got sciatica so badly, and I know it was from the emotional
stress
abuse
related.
Well, I took emotional abuse constantly.
Right.
I can't repeat the things he would say to me.
Right.
Well,
see, but Drew's going to defend him right now, we don't want to go down. This could just be the Tom Sizemore defended by Bob and Drew episode.
We want me to be able to walk out of here, so we can't do
you
that.
You have to have a sense of humor about this.
You do. He's like Trump almost. Yeah, you just have to like take it as
he's
goes.
He scared us. Remember when he scared us?
Well, he's. I knew to be scared. You didn't know be scared, and I informed you to be scared. Drew was walking up to his house one day, and I go, I wouldn't walk right up to the windows because he might shoot you.
Yeah.
And Drew was like, holy shit, right?
So we were backing against the – he's got that hedge there down below. We were against the hedge. But I think that was after we had an encounter with him, though.
Yeah, later.
We'd been in his bedroom.
And he'd come out to talk to us, and he'd go back in.
And we followed him back into his bathroom, and he started – bellowing in there.
Oh!
and that's when we both backed out slowly.
It was the weirdest thing ever. You don't. He
I hope he doesn't own any guns.
He enriches your life.
Definitely does.
He enriches your life.
I love Tom.
I just can't believe he's still alive.
I think Tom is getting a little worried about his age, though. I noticed on his Facebook post a lot of birthday talk.
Birthday stuff.
I can't believe it was at your birthday too.
I can't believe that either.
But then there were like 200 people there, so.
Sorry, Miss Tom. Sorry, I missed you, man. I would love to see you.
I know.
Let's pretend Tom's not listening to this. He's not going to listen to this.
He doesn't listen to
anything.
Well,
yeah. If you know Tom out there, just let him know.
Just love him. And
we'd love to have him back on the podcast, too, and catch up.
Well, we do really genuinely love and care about him.
I do.
And he burned Anna out, and I'm sorry that that happened.
Yeah,
I'm sorry
I
had PTSD. But,
no but Me
every
Too boss stuff going on
over incredible.
There.
What's
no,
that?
No Me Too stuff over there, too?
More Me Too stuff than I can even describe.
How about the fact that... Any book
I would
she
imagine
goes,
that would be first.
Any book, Drew, any book she ghost writes, any person she helps with their biography is going to be a breeze. It's going to be a joy.
Yeah, think how easy.
Think of how great
I
that is.
I met with Cameron Diaz to do her book right afterwards.
She's
she didn't pick me.
She's
but like, I'm just like, No, it's, I've worked for a lot of alcoholics.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to get like controversial right away, but like the Me Too stuff was nothing compared to the emotional abuse and Tom threw phones at me and, you know, really scary stuff.
Yeah, I get it. You know, nobody's discounting that. It's just he's the last of a certain thing. And I, you know,
Of a certain thing.
A certain type of person that I think is
so maybe so magical as an actor. I'm sure you saw that. All that underneath stuff is all
and that he's brilliant. Yeah. I mean, the gift
super
of the gab was
really, super brilliant.
Right. It is really something else.
He started having
he can almost
no more Tom.
We're
gonna
Tom. He can almost convince you of the lie he's involving you in is real.
Right. No more Tom.
You're like, I did deal you drugs.
Anna, what do you want to talk about? Party girl?
Well, okay, this is what I want to talk about, and that's very kind of you to even ask. Yeah. So I will say, so Party Girl was the very first book I wrote. It's the only book I wrote that I actually think is good. It's true.
Because it's your book.
Because it's my book,
right.
And because I didn't have, and you might relate to this, like having many books, I didn't have all the Amazon reviews, and is the New York Times going to review it? In my head, it was just this pure experience,
and I
channeled something, and then I really wanted it to be made into an audiobook, and I really wanted it to be a movie.
You just recently got movie rights.
It did. It did. So the movie rights were optioned several times, but this is like a real time. It's a Scorsese producer.
Wow.
And it looks very real. And so the audiobook, HarperCollins never sold the rights. My agent got them back.
Mm.
And then I used Emily Morris's studio. She was going out of town. She's
nice.
Like, use my studio, use my engineer. I spent 3 days recording it. Did you do an audiobook for your book?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, it's hell. Did you?
He just did the opiate.
We just did an audio read for the
opiate. How long
did
that take? 2 days? Three days?
7 hours, something like that.
Seven hours straight through?
But two sessions.
Yeah.
But my book cracked. I was in a real audio, you know, real setting for that with a producer on me.
That's the book you did with Todd Gold, right?
Yes, yes. I love that book.
Yeah, you did an audiobook back then?
Mm-hmm.
That was so long ago.
So cutting edge.
So
yeah, but it came out on cassette.
Was it really a cassette?
Probably. I don't know, CD.
But so...
Certainly wasn't on the interweb.
Yeah, the interweb.
No audible.com.
Al Gore hadn't invented the interweb.
But so the thing that was really nice about this is that I really wanted this dream to come true, and the dream came true because I took control of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I recorded it, and my friend did the cover, and then it came out, and that just – it makes me really happy. And then those movie rights sold right at the same time.
But you read it?
I read it.
See, I've just never wanted to do that. I wanted somebody else to read it.
I get that.
Like,
I get that.
Johnny Depp. I want Johnny Depp to read it.
Let's make that happen.
Right. I did
hard
an
to get
intro
a hold of
to
him. So he's a little isolated.
I did a Doug Stanhope, who I'm now friendly with.
Love him. I remember
Doug Stanhope.
This.
And we were he was
he didn't, he didn't love you.
He didn't love me to begin
right.
with. And we made friends. And about a couple of years ago, I got a call from him like, "I want you to write the foreword to my book, his book." And I thought I was being punked. I literally thought that somebody's pulling this off. I mean, my first reaction was, what about your friend Depp? Don't you want him to read it? Get Johnny Depp to read it for you.
Yeah.
Because he's very close with Johnny Depp. And no, he couldn't. Same reaction you had, which I can't quite get him.
Mike, going to – yeah, it's hard to get. But I just felt like, you know, because when I – you know the guy that was on Star Trek? The older guy,
Forrest
the really sophisticated guy.
Leonard Nimoy?
No, the new one. the movies.
The captain.
Yeah, the captain guy.
Yeah.
He does a lot of books. I just like listening to him read a book.
We'll read Bob Forrest's story.
Like somebody like that.
Most
like, and then I took drugs and then I was off.
The most people do not read their own books. And in fact, these audio authors have huge fan bases where if you get a popular audiobook author, then you can attract their fans too. It's a whole thing.
There's so many weird little things like that.
Okay, so I thought her book, Party Girl, which I'm holding it up now, was a great book. It really was.
Let me see the cover.
It reminded me of the way I wrote, too, about these experiences. You're in it, and you're in it the way she was in it when she's writing about it. And the same thing in recovery. The recovery is real, and that process is real. And
well,
it's hard.
And I really, the
reason I stand behind it to this day is that's a way to get people to understand these things. Have them narratives and firsthand experiences and narrative stories.
Well, the best part of the recovery thing is I'm still alive.
Yep.
Well, but here was my thing: is I was a huge fan of recovery memoirs and permanent.
Which ones?
Permanent Midnight.
But Jerry.
But most of them are
Jerry
war.
Invented it.
But most of them they're war stories usually.
But the thing is, I always
but it's so identifiable when a junkie's really being honest.
Yeah.
I remember being high, living in my car, reading Permanent Midnight, and thinking, oh, my God, I meet at the same McDonald's to meet the dope man.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's so – you ever read Permanent Midnight?
And his next thought was, how cool.
Right, totally how cool.
It's not the intent of Anna's book. She to feel cool about it.
No. But I will say, except for Permanent Midnight, all the recovery memoirs I read, they got so boring when the person got sober.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
And so I felt so surprised by recovery being so different than I expected it to be. I wanted the recovery part to be the fun part.
Yeah.
So I specifically did a novel and not a memoir against my agent's advice. And I think in retrospect, it would have done a lot better as a memoir. Yes.
I just read it as a memoir.
HarperCollins invented a new genre. They called it reality fiction.
Didn't a million little pieces blow that whole thing up?
Yeah, mine
right?
sold the week that scandal happened. And he's a friend of mine. He wrote the intro to one of my books.
Wow. That is a real book. When I read his book, because that was remember, we had to have a group at Los Encinas because all the clients were so disillusioned. We watched the Oprah interview, and I remember walking out in the nurse station going, well, Jesus, crucifying him.
Yeah.
This is awful. Why did he sign up for this?
Yeah.
He should have just said, listen, people thought I'd make, people would read it more if it was thought of as a biography, as a memoir.
But you know how scandals go. It was just this,
the way
she
describes,
ambushed him.
The way he describes Hazelden, only somebody who had been there and felt those feelings could have written that. And you don't even have to have pliers to pull your teeth out. I've just wiggled my teeth out with my fingers. That whole thing that's a lie, I don't know if it's a lie, but I know that our teeth just fall out.
Yeah.
That part was a lie.
I'm sure he saw a girlfriend have her tooth fall out.
But, it's really hard to predict what is going to be a scandal and what. Have you ever read Have You No Shame, the John Ronson book?
No.
You would love it. As someone who has been unfairly shamed.
Yeah.
I require you to read this book.
Okay. Well, order it right now.
I swim in shame. What's wrong with shame?
but you know that Twitter outrage that just has nothing to do with, where you can just stumble into something. You're one tweet away from your career being destroyed because self-righteous. I think I'm very, very liberal. But I think that liberals can jump on top of each other for when that's – we're not the enemy. We're not one another's enemies.
John Ronson.
He's brilliant. Ronson. Oh, you should have him on the podcast.
Okay, I'm coming.
He's got this great accent.
It's only in a Kindle.
No,
I got to be able to.
Listen to it. You should listen to it because right after listening to Party Girl, Bob, you should listen to. You should listen to. So you've been publicly shamed.
So since the using is depressing, can I just fast forward to that exciting recovery part?
Yes, you can. Well, the truth is, I had gotten sober and I got a job at Premier Magazine.
Is it So You've Been Publicly Shamed or Have You No Shame?
Sorry, it's called So You've Been Publicly Shamed.
Okay.
And there's another book called Have You No Shame?
Yes.
That's not by him though.
No.
And he has a bunch of other books. He has a book called The Psychopath Test, which Tom Sizemore Could Pass. And he has a bunch of other books. And he has a podcast that's great. We're not plugging John Ronson, though. So let's
get back to the fact that sobriety is always portrayed as boring. It's always the last two chapters of a book, whether it's the guys in Guns N' Roses or, you know, Iggy Pop or all the biographies of all the drug addicts, which there are thousands. They always, the sobriety is just so hard to write about.
Yeah, to me, sobriety is so much more interesting than addiction. Addiction was so boring and rote. And my story isn't even that intense. I just did cocaine. I didn't shoot it. I didn't do hair. I did heroin once and took nude pictures. Doesn't matter. I didn't shoot it. And
are the nude pictures in the book?
The nude pictures are not in the book. I would maybe sell a few more copies if there were. But the book does open with a menage a trois, which really was based in reality. Sorry,
that's
Mom. It happened
pitch.
At my mom's house.
Mom's house?
Yeah, it was a wedding at mom's house and maybe my stepdad. Walked in. And it is the opening chapter.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah, Drew blocked that part out.
Two women or two men?
Two men, which is the wrong way to do it.
That's not the way to do it. I can tell you that right now. That's the wrong way. You just made a mistake.
I know. I have a line in Party Girl where you're supposed to do a menage with one of the members of the Red Hot Chili Peppers and your hottest friend. You are not supposed to do it with two nerdy groomsmen.
How's Facebook react? Any questions on Facebook? Any questions, Susan?
Nobody.
Okay.
Crickets.
I was not.
but it hasn't hit yet. We're in a little time delay.
Rock and roll is not what people think it is. The one time I was ever involved in something that was in college, and it really didn't actuate out the way that it's supposed to.
That whole thing
is a myth from Penthouse Letters.
I think
it and
Sex on a Plane are like the two, or in a bathroom. I've never done that. But I just feel like those are the things that are like supposed to be so titillating and exciting, and in fact, they're not.
Don't you think it's mythology invented in the letters of Playboy magazine and Penthouse Letters, Drew? In our childhood, in the
70s.
Well,
I think a lot
in
of
the 70s
yeah,
is
lot,
where it comes
I know,
from.
A lot of stuff was born out of that.
Which was healthier sexuality than they're getting today.
I don't think they're even
really?
Having sex today.
No, but I mean,
I think they're not
culture.
Having sex today.
I just saw the cover of. It might be Time Magazine this week says exactly that.
It's crazy.
I know. Well, whatever the next generation is has to do something against what the previous generation did.
Right.
And we were sort of seen as excessively preoccupied with this stuff and excessively indulgent in it and exploitative of one another. And they're not that far off. They're not that far off. There's a middle ground to be had. We were celebrating some renewed, you know, unleashing that came out of the biological. We had antibiotics and oral contraceptives for the first time in human history, and that unleashed the possibility of sexuality without biological consequences.
But and millennials don't have sex as much, I'm telling
correct.
You.
Correct.
Okay, true. And you're saying why is that?
Because some of it is reaction to the previous generation. There's always
I think they don't care about anything, including
some of
that.
Some of it is they didn't develop relationships during adolescence and young adulthood. They don't have the normal forming and breaking. In high school and even
right.
in college, they just hang out. They don't date. They don't form relationships very often. And they hit out in pornography, and we don't know what that did to them. We have no idea what the consequences
of
that would be.
Yeah, that's a component to it. Yeah. So I've been running rehabs most of my adult life, right? 25 years now. Your main focus in the late 90s and early 2000s is got to make sure they don't do that. Tonight, talking to the nighttime text. They're going to do it. They're going to try.
Look
and you'd
book.
Have you just have multiple things of that every night, especially on the weekend. On Monday, you'd come in like four incident reports of patients having sex.
Yes.
We had a client get pregnant in our treatment center
dude.
By
a tech,
a staff.
No, somebody you know very well.
Oh, no. God.
Don't even talk about it.
Yeah.
Don't even talk about it.
I know someone who had sex with him in rehab who's been on your podcast. Let's
okay.
Really
okay. So,
she was not in rehab. She was in a hospital and she talks about it.
So, listen to this. So, nowadays, never
but
happened.
But don't you think that's opiates?
Rehab.
Because everybody was going in for like coke and these crazy things. I don't know.
We treated plenty of heroin addicts.
But when opiates are taken out of you and you're free of opiates, it usually explodes.
Your sex drive comes.
But millennials just they either don't break rules, which is something they don't care enough to break rules.
Oh my God,
it's weird. Yeah. But the sex thing, I just realized when we're talking about it, it just doesn't happen in rehab that much anymore.
That's amazing. Because that used to be a major problem.
Yeah. it'll sometimes happen between a.
Do you think it's because you're using so much psychotropic meds,
maybe,
Suboxone and things like
maybe.
That?
Maybe
those are not good.
Oh,
for
look
it.
At, oh, and that's the hand signal for you at
they're
home.
They're not good for that.
Yeah, no, all those meds you use for withdrawal or mood or everything.
Is Seroquel, Neurontin, and Depakote? Those are the primary.
Not Depakote, but Seroquel will suppress it.
But Neurontin doesn't, right?
Neurontin doesn't, but Seroquel will, and you know, Suboxone for sure will, and you know,
right.
Speaking of
the
previous...
Suboxone, actual drug studies say it doesn't, but I believe it does.
Of course, it does. Right, what? Anna, what?
Speaking of previous podcast guests, Darren Prince.
Yes.
What a doll. You've gotten in with him.
Yes. Is that good?
Yeah, because we did his book. Did you know that? I published his book.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
Why didn't he tell me that?
I don't know.
I accidentally have three copies now because when he was on, I wanted to read it. I bought it on Amazon. Then you gave me your copy, and then he gave me a copy. Now I got three copies.
Well, I was going to – I want to go out on the road with him a little bit and let him tell his war story and the recovery, and then also to talk about addiction around his story. He's a good speaker about recovery. About
I know. You weren't at his party.
I was the one in New York.
So here's what happened.
You went to the one here in L.A., didn't you?
You didn't.
Oh, no,
I didn't.
You know what?
You weren't
there. Let's do this really quick before we get into Darren Prince. Let's take a little break. I'm going to have Anna share this on her Facebook.
Yeah.
Because this is live. So you can go to Dr. Drew and you can share it on your Facebook. Go to Dr. Drew.com, you know, Dr. Drew Facebook.
Yeah.
Just say we're talking about menage a trois and all kinds of stuff.
Share it on your Facebook Live.
Does anybody have any questions for Facebook?
Not yet.
Is Bert still watching?
No.
Oh.
Bert left?
It's always hard because
howdy doody.
Wait, Susan, do I go to Drew's page?
Dr.
To do
Drew.
It?
Yeah.
Just okay. Not, Dr. Drew. Not the one, not the my public one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So got a Dr. Drew.
The public one, not the other one. Because we follow each other on the
because
private
we're very
one.
Close. 26 watching. We've got some people.
I know, but we can get more if you post it on your Facebook Live.
Okay.
If the three of us went to Vaughn's, we'd have 26 people watching. Come on, people.
You know what? Why am I not a bigger draw? Now I'm going to get sad.
Well, because we just did a podcast.
Pay attention to stuff that doesn't matter.
Sometimes people, like, you know.
They burn out
as
the day goes on.
Okay, that makes me feel better. Share. That's how you share.
Okay, share and just click it and so it goes on your feed.
Share to a page. Jesus, not this page. You know what?
I'm going to tell you something about what to focus on.
Yes.
It's important.
Let her finish posting, Bob, and then we're going to take a break.
Okay.
Well, if you're dealing with addiction, finding treatment is difficult. It's hard to navigate what's out there. The truth is, every patient's needs are different and constantly evolving. I've had the pleasure of vetting True Recovery in Orange County. They realized, of course, that effective care can't be one size fits all because they're reputable and they care about their patients. So, of course, they're going to be highly individualized. They have developed a comprehensive range of treatments that can address all the facets of drug and alcohol addiction. And True Recovery's master level clinicians maintain small caseloads, allowing them to truly personalize their care and get involved on a connected level, which is what the key to recovery is. They offer individualized treatment plans from residential to outpatient. And again, always with the holistic approach and focus on accountability. Mm-hmm. As patients become ready, True Recovery offers assistance with life and coping skills, school and vocational coordination, as well as community reintegration support. We hear this all the time where people get recovery but then don't know how to live. They don't know how to get out into the world. Well, True Recovery helps with that. I've spoken with True Recovery's medical director and was impressed with their range of therapeutic modalities and psychiatric services. This experienced team is well equipped to manage patients at all levels. To request information on how True Recovery can provide you with your personalized care or for that of one of your family members, go to drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E. That is drdrew.com/true, T-R-U-E.
We're back.
So here is what I was going to say is about a year ago, I get this email from this guy. He's like, I want to be a recovery advocate. I'm a sports agent. Oh. And so he comes to LA and I'm suspicious and think like this guy, there's no way this guy is really who he says he is. So I invite Ryan Hampton. Do you know Ryan?
I do know Ryan.
So I invite Ryan. I say, there's this sketchy guy who's, you know, and so Darren walks in and he's like, Dennis Rodman this and Magic Johnson this. And he's so nice. And he says, I want you to write my book. And Ryan says, before she does that, can you have Dennis Rodman follow me on Twitter? Okay, and so Darren leaves, and I go, why'd you ask that? And he goes, oh, it's the first way to prove someone's full of it. If they can't get someone to follow you on Twitter,
right,
then they're totally full of it. And he goes, oh, Dennis Rodman's following me on Twitter. And so then Darren asked me to publish his book. And so Kristen McGinnis, so we do that. That's the publishing part, is Kristen McGinnis interviewed him. We did the book. I, you know, got the cover and the, we published
it. It's a great
it.
Book.
It's a great book.
It's great.
And we did
Maybe
not
Maybe you and
know,
I should do the Celebrity Rehab book story.
Oh, that would be good.
Anyone do it?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Would die to do it.
You wouldn't believe what went on behind the scenes there.
Can you do that? Why haven't you already?
Well, because I didn't think of it till just now.
I know. There's such great stories. So
my
Shelley,
clown is watching now.
You love Shelley, right? So Shelley is a friend of mine, and I know we're trying to cast this nurse. It was actually described as a nurse.
Yeah.
And nurses are, you know.
Boring.
Boring, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and Sasha, who it really is based on, wouldn't do it.
Right.
Right? So, I go to lunch with Shelley and her husband. And I'm like, oh, my God, she would be television gold.
Okay, right? But do you want to know something weird? I don't know her. I know the husband. They're not married anymore.
Yeah, they're not married
He was
anymore.
My computer IT guy.
Oh, you're
and
kidding.
And so, from his perspective, he's like, you know, my wife Joel. Is going in to meet. And I was like, I know Drew. I love Drew. And so, I saw it from that
perspective.
All right,
so let's meet with whoever we have to meet with.
Yeah, let's do it.
Do a couple sessions, probably individually and then together.
Yeah.
And let's do this thing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
You guys heard it first. Is this better than a contract?
Celebrity Rehab
so,
book.
Yeah. So does Rodman follow you too now?
He does. He does. And he retweets me occasionally. And I have this insane picture that we took at Darren's party where he's holding my head like it is a basketball that he's about to throw into a basket.
He's so big.
He's quite big.
I like him.
Now you love him, right?
Dennis. I wouldn't go that. That was the only time I've ever met him.
Okay, well, I have the same feeling for Dennis.
Me too.
I have
Me
for
too.
Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
They're like lovable fuck ups.
They're human beings.
Protect.
Yeah,
I would feel for Dennis Rodman's ghostwriter if he had one.
Oh, yeah. He probably has. Of course, he's written books.
He's
multiple.
Actually doing
yeah, of
pretty
course,
well
he,
right
he's
now.
He's a multiple.
Yeah.
He gets
multiple
bored.
Books.
When he gets bored, he loses focus.
Yeah.
Nothing makes me happier than telling him, just repeating to him, Dennis. Here's two words that are now being discussed in the same sentence. You ever imagine this?
Nobel
Dennis.
Prize. Yeah,
Dennis Rodman, Nobel Peace Prize. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
He just goes, oh, no.
He's
he thinks
so
that's
funny.
So funny.
But,
he
but
loves
yeah,
too.
Let's do it.
Okay, done. Done.
Yeah,
Should we start right now live?
Yeah, so Shelley.
What's the opening?
Shelley quits on day four, I think, and Drew had to walk with her around the park.
She locked herself in the bathroom.
She was like, we were up for it. You know, me and Drew knew what was going to happen, and Shelley had no idea what was going to happen.
We're going to have Bai Ling here later today. So how about when Bai Ling was up on the roof of
You can interview her today right away. Do your first interview.
There you go. You can do Bai Ling. Start right away.
I remember I was on the set one day. I didn't know you as well as I do now. And you were doing your KABC show on
the
set.
Yeah,
this was season two.
In the trailer.
In the trailer. And I remember we walked in.
The saddest moment of my addiction treatment life happened in that room.
In that trailer?
What happened?
When Dr. Bloom came back and told
us about
you
his disease.
What he had. Yeah.
Mike
he's
Bloom's...
got 6 months to live. I mean, I was just so heavy. He walked in and we're on the air and we knew he was going to get tested for cancer. And he just repeated a medical term that's like 17 letters long. And Drew stopped and took his headphones off and went over. And that was heavy. That was heavy.
However, I have a weird reaction to men. It's always been men that I can think of. Women are already so hardy. But I've had several physicians who have said something like that to me, like, now it's my turn. I've got about 6 months. And they do it with
How
such –
How heavy is that? Because doctors the deal.
Yeah. There's like three guys in my head that did it with such grace and dignity that I thought, oh. I hope I can be like that. I hope we all can face things like this that way, because it's just the dignity with which they.
Drew
do
likes
it.
To say there's about 3,000 pages of things in his head that he knows he can die of.
Oh yeah, oh
God!
Thousands,
can you imagine the burden
if you
of
had,
that?
If you had serious paranoia as opposed to mild paranoia, you know what? This reminds me. I just heard you on a podcast, and it was great because you revealed things I have never heard you reveal.
What did I say?
Jordan Harbinger's podcast.
Yes, yes.
Talking about wanting to go back to practicing medicine. I don't know if that was just the mood you
were in. No. I fantasize, not by practicing, but going back to hospitalist and addiction.
Addiction.
Like really going back, like the way I did it full time for decades. And I
I have a future for us that he doesn't know about.
What is it?
It's, well, there's a hospital in Laguna Beach that became a complete addiction facility. With that little
South Coast?
Yeah, South Coast is an addiction thing that American Addiction Center owns.
It is?
It's all addiction.
Wow.
And somehow American Addiction Center's stock is plummeting and their boards, you know, it's all like...
It's not a good place to be involved with,
though. I know, but somehow that could play and be in our hands someday.
I mean, getting out of the treatment actual industry was kind... You're still actively
in
a treatment center?
Yeah.
I got out of it because here's what drove me out of it was... We by the end
insurance
of the
insurance industry.
Well, the hospital was starting to squeeze us because we were a bad business for them.
Right.
Addiction is not good business. It just isn't. And so, you know, they were squeezing us and squeezing us and squeezing us. And, you know, I was working for free essentially.
Right.
And the
$3,000 a month.
No, I didn't get that even.
Oh, you got half that.
Yeah. Yeah. And
can you imagine making millions of dollars for a hospital? They stipend them that.
And so. What drove me insane was towards the end of our run, every patient was a chronic pain patient on opiates who come in with 20 out of 10 pain, take them off the pain meds. 10 days later, they don't have pain.
Right.
And we struggle with them and fight and get them and bring them.
Fast forward
3 months, doctor puts them back on pain meds.
Right.
And that happened hundreds, maybe 1,000 times, and I can't do it. And now I think people understand that's what happened to Jeff Conway.
Yeah.
And we struggled.
That's
workers' comp
you're talking about.
Well, some of it was that, some of it was trying, some of it was all different kinds. It was just demoralizing for me.
I walked into work one day, because I'm coming from absence-based, and there's this woman sucking on a lollipop, just
fentanyl?
Wasted out of her mind in the hospital.
Yeah.
She needs that. And I was like, she doesn't look like she needs much right now.
But possibly due to the work that you do and the severity of the opiate epidemic, medical schools are actually going to start educating people a little bit better?
A little bit. It's they had to scare physicians, which they've done. They scared them into better behavior.
Yeah.
And so now we're better. It's better. But the understanding
really
of addiction
The ones who really know are the ones on the front lines. You know, like an entry-level job for a GP is emergency rooms. But working in an emergency room the last 10 years in America is just working with drug addicts.
Right.
But they develop distorted ideas about it because they're seeing it in an ice pick. They see them just in a moment, and they're just a pain that they have to get them out.
Right.
And it's very difficult to give them a real understanding.
But drug addicts come every 3 months.
But here's what you have to understand: addiction. You have to see recovery, and you have to see the process.
Yeah.
They never see that. So
let's do this book.
18 years sober.
Who's going to do the audiobook? Who's going to read the audiobook?
18 years sober. By the way,
that's incredible. Congratulations.
Congrats.
How long are you?
Who's going to read 22? Who's going to read the audiobook of the Celebrity Rehab book that we write
together? You will read it in unison.
No, let's get Cameron Diaz.
Oh.
Maybe we can get one of the Celebrity Rehab people.
I'd say Sizemore will do it.
No,
Dennis.
No. Let's get Mac.
McKenzie.
Yeah.
Oh,
McKenzie, right.
That should be great.
It's interesting, too, because coming from traditional publishing and moving into more indie publishing, like, we could get that book out in 6 months. I haven't even known Darren a year. And that book is like an international bestseller.
I know.
It just happens like that.
We need to bring this on the heels of that.
Amazon leveled the playing field.
They really did. Did you know, I'm not to do a shameless name drop, but I was in their wedding. My childhood friend married Jeff Bezos. And
what?
I know. Isn't that insane? We were living
in
New York right after college. She meets this guy and she really likes him. They get married right away and we go to their wedding, which is in Florida. It's a tiny wedding. And then she's like, you're not going to believe this. He wants to open a bookstore in like Seattle, and where everybody feels so bad. She was my childhood.
Everyone feels bad for her.
Oh, yeah.
I love this story.
And then I am really excellent at almost strategically losing touch with the people I know that become huge.
I have a friend that everyone he befriended in the 20s became famous.
Okay, how about Matt Damon? Yeah, I was like, I my college boyfriend. Like, oh, he's really talented. He's really talented. I was like, yeah, right. And
he's gonna go places.
Yeah, no, everyone's like, calm down. You're sleeping with him. Your perspective is off. And so I am so good. So my brother, who blew off the wedding because he just was like, you know, didn't care. You know, now I can I yeah. This is on my Facebook page. Whatever. He's all in with them. And
your brother is?
Yeah.
I recently
was emailing with her, and she's lovely and completely
Jeff seems
not
like
changed.
A very interesting dude.
I think
he's
going to
change the face of healthcare.
I hope so.
Oh, now he's in healthcare?
Yeah, healthcare. He and Warren Buffett. And
Chase Bank. The head of Chase Bank.
Diamond?
Yeah.
Jamie Diamond.
So it's going to be Chase, Berkshire Hathaway, Amazon.
God,
I hope
so.
Start their own healthcare system.
I hope so.
I mean, if you think about the things he has changed in our lives.
Yeah.
And that's my new goal, is how do you become a visionary?
It's all over with.
No, but I mean about anything.
No, it is.
Anna has small goals.
Small goals.
How to become a visionary.
But seriously, in my little world.
Well, the most powerful people, Bezos, that was something that everybody kind of saw as like, that's not that important.
Books.
How people get things to their house.
Yeah.
Another big mistake that Bill Gates made was who the server is, the search engine. So he just basically gave it to Google.
Well, and then
he just
Bezos,
gave it to them. He said, I need a thing,
guys
were doing it.
I just saw that.
You know where Bezos
the most powerful people are Bezos and Google,
you know where Bezos,
not Bill Gates.
Right. You know where Bezos makes most of his money? It's not for Amazon.
It's from what?
The cloud. He owns all the cloud stuff.
Did you hear he makes like something like, I don't even know, like $100 million a minute? Like it's something it's so insane. Yeah. Yes, I'm in his wedding pictures, just to be clear.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's well, so maybe cool. He can help us with some of the.
Yeah.
Maybe do a little
get
algorithm.
Get that celebrity
something.
Rehab. Maybe you watch the Celebrity Rehab.
Could be.
We'll get him the book.
You'd be surprised if you watched Celebrity Rehab.
I know Howard Stern helped us.
Right.
He liked it.
But you know that thing, I love that we're all into the book, like where it's like you can't go to that level. I wish I knew somebody like a lower level Amazon person, like who actually could help.
Yeah.
Right.
But but I figured out Amazon algorithms. Sorry, Jeff. And so I know how to.
Okay, well, don't divulge it now.
I'm not going to tell anybody, but we know how to make a book a bestseller.
All right, let's do it. Done. Can't wait. It'll be fun.
Dr. Drew Howard Stern talking about the book helps sell
and
books.
And by the way, I haven't thought about our experience, and so it'll be fun to go through it all again. It really will. It'd really be fun to tell the stories. And I would like you to interview the patients.
How do you see it? Just one thing that's in my mind is Drew started to become me, and I was forced to become him.
Really?
What?
Because he was so upset with the producers and what they wanted him to do.
Yeah.
And so we would be in this dressing room together and be like, and I'd be saying the things he was saying to me 5 years
That's
before.
Probably true.
And he was just like, I'm not going water skiing.
Water skiing? Oh, it's an activity.
They wanted us to go snowboarding and everything you can imagine.
I know those producers. I remember Damien.
Yeah. We're going to go whitewater rafting, and Drew just his head almost exploded.
My point was,
one going, "Hey guys, let me talk to him for a minute." And I'm being the Mister.
My point was they're sick.
Yeah.
These people are ill.
We're going to go whitewater rafting.
I'm barely clear that they're stable enough for this environment. They might need to be in a hospital, and you want to take them and put them in a car. If you remember when they took Sizemore down to that.
The soup kitchen.
No. It was a family treatment center. The county had addiction treatment for women with children. And we went down and we did a bunch.
It was like a county thing.
But it was a little fair we put on for the kids. I remember Mindy was there and Rodman was there. But they brought Sizemore into the back of a car. And I had to sit out with him in the car and monitor him because I was so worried about him. And I finally forced them to take him home because it was just ridiculous. So that's the kind of stuff where I was responsible for these guys. Took it very seriously. These are not well people. That's all.
And that's why it's just so ludicrous that people misunderstood.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, you'll get into it. We'll do
it. Yeah. Save that.
This is Anna's podcast.
She's going to write this book. She needs to know.
You don't want to know how many people. I think I've interacted with every single person who was ever on that show. I've interviewed Mac repeatedly.
Yeah.
Love her.
Yeah.
Remember, I got sober with Jen Jimenez. A different show, but still.
I didn't know. I did not know that.
I told you a while ago. You have a lot of information. You have all those diseases locked in your brain. Yeah.
But Jen,
a lot of the stuff he's told are lies because it's come from drug addicts. So you never know what you can
keep. No, that was true.
Yeah, and I learned when people tell me things about treatment, I kind of push it out of my memory. I just figure.
Yeah, you're not supposed to remember.
Right.
Yeah. So we got sober together. You know, log cabin, early 2000s. Right. Class
so
of
we have a question on Facebook.
Yeah.
From Andy. I'm curious if Anna can discuss her life coaching work and how coaching can inspire millennials to Gen Z to develop the practical life skills needed to change the world.
Wow.
As many young people want to do and have purpose and meaning in, and also do less abstract or emotionally charged things that are necessary to take care of, like the various domains of our lives, such as being responsible with finances, voting, physical and mental health. What I'm seeing is that young folks are emotionally oriented to do big things, but lack the groundlessness and practicality to do the tangible work that needs to come to be effective people and leaders and servants who are capable.
I'm hiring him as my new writer.
Of creating such change. I know, and I'm reading it pretty well. This coffee's really working.
Yeah. He is on it.
I think millennial narcissism even exists in this emotionally charged social media, political, and social drama realm and time period and work-like. Life coaching can serve to connect the intangibles young generations ride on with the material and tangible actions and practicalities young.
Oh,
it's easy to read because he's good. Practically, these young people need to have and develop and manifest their grand and visionary outcomes.
Right, so hold on. Enough.
Question
for Anna. Okay.
Yeah. This is for Anna.
Okay.
Remember it?
Yeah, I mean, barely. A couple of things. This is what I wanted to say. Well, you know, I don't do life coaching, but I do writing coaching. And the big part of it is it's therapeutic writing. It's sharing your darkest experiences to find your light, hence Light Hustler, because it's through sharing it that you release the shame. And then you get all these other people to just be like, oh, I'm not alone with this terrible problem. The thing about millennials, this is what I've really noticed. I have had some that have worked for me that have been the typical terrible, entitled, brilliant, but entitled, so you can't work with them. And then I know some now. I'm kind of in a thing where I'm befriending all these people who are like 10 to 15 years younger than me. It's maybe a sad sign of middle age. But they're incredible.
Yeah. Millennials are incredible.
And they are so motivated and they're so successful and I'm learning business lessons from them. So it really does seem to be this division.
Yeah.
And, you know, and part of it is growing up in that, like, whatever you call it, the ribbon giving society where they were given a ribbon for showing up.
Mm. But this guy is on to something. This is a male or female question.
So Andy.
So, well, it could be a female. And the idea, though, that they want to do big things. They're looking for their ultimate muse. They will not start at step one. They don't know how to do that.
Right.
And that's what he's looking for, how to practically, you know, you want to change the world, you want to do something substantial, but how do you practically get somebody started?
Well, I think there's a lot of grunt work that is humbling and not humiliating,
and important.
And that you have to put it in because the people that sort of magically, you know, especially these like tech people who seem to be 24 and multimillionaires, you know, the fall
there's
comes.
There's not as many of them. That's a myth.
Well,
there's not a lot of them.
Having known some terribly successful people, I will say that, you know.
It's 1,000, but that example gets used about millennials. There's 1,000 of those guys.
Right.
Or gals.
And millions.
There's
more.
Millions who don't know the basic fundamentals of things. And I give this example the ones that are good will sign up for the grunt work, but they don't know that the grunt work, how you do the grunt work, is how you get to the next level.
But
they don't understand that, and they will never get out of the grunt work.
But I think that's a really good point.
Well, now, wait a minute. You're making
2 points
at once.
Hundreds of
but
millennials.
Why won't they get out of the grunt work? Because they don't do it well enough?
They don't do it. They don't know how to do things excellently so that it benefits. Work smart. Work for them.
What I've noticed is they don't see the road ahead.
Yeah, that,
so
that's a more general statement.
They don't understand that if they work excellently, as you say,
at the grunt work, somebody will notice someday. Not tomorrow, not guaranteed. Someday they will notice.
Do you want to know when my career really changed? I stopped working for abusive people. What?
I'll make you stop for 1 second. Bob, but is it possible, in response to your statement, that the economy has been so weird and shitty for the last 20 years? That road doesn't exist anymore. At least they don't see it as something that exists.
They don't see it as that.
The road totally exists.
Yeah.
Their grandmas work at Walmart as greeters to subsidize their Medi-Cal.
Right. So they don't see the road, but they don't trust the roads there. And to some extent, they're kind of onto something because it's not the same as it used to be where things are growing. And maybe we'll get there soon. When it does, they'll benefit. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you. But, I mean, growing, working for themselves and being independent entrepreneurs, there are more possibilities than ever.
They like that.
And the thing is, what I do think the difference is this idea of it sounds so cheesy, of being of service. Like, as soon as you stop thinking about what can I gain and yes. what can I gain and how can I help my boss or help anybody,
yes.
your career explodes.
And one-on-one. When did yours explode?
Well,
you're about to tell
I'm still waiting. No, but I mean, mine only exploded in the way that I really thought I had to work for these abusive people, Sizemore being almost the best of the bunch. And I really...
Never met Harvey Weinstein?
Yeah. I have... But, you know, your co-host, who has met Harvey, your co-host...
Lauren Savannah,
she was
KBC.
A good friend of mine in New York.
When we, really?
Yeah, there's so much crossover.
Dude, that's
I know.
So weird.
I've been to her condo in Miami. She's awesome.
Yeah, she is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lauren Savannah, I do a daily radio show 12 to 3. You can find it at kbc.com or drdrew.com.
Yeah, she gave me vibrators for my 40th birthday.
Perfect.
Oh,
I
need more. Give me some more stuff I can use on the radio.
That's all I got.
This is the best.
But I do remember hearing the Harvey story from her back in the day.
Yeah, she would tell everybody. She didn't withhold it.
No.
But we all just went, oh, God, how weird.
Yeah.
And then finally, when, who was it, Rose McGowan or somebody came up, she went, yeah, that's his move. He did that to me too.
Yeah.
And that was it. Boom.
Yeah. But what were we saying
your
about
your career exploded?
I'm still waiting for my
when
career
you're
to
doing
explode.
The grunt work, how do you get to the next level?
Well, which is what this guy's question was.
Right.
Okay. Well, I will also say, you know that Jim Rome quote: "You are the culmination of the three people you surround yourself with the most." A lot of sort of entrepreneurial types always say that, and I do think you surround yourself with excellence and getting rid of the competitive element and really just seeing...
What does that mean? What do you mean, get rid of it?
Well, as a formerly massively competitive person that just saw anyone succeeding as her enemy, as soon as I sort of stopped seeing that, and I started
That's
to realize...
That's a chick thing. Until you start going through menopause. After menopause, everybody gets a lot nicer.
Yeah,
really?
Look forward to.
Yes. Okay, something to look forward to. That's good to know.
Sorry.
Sex may be painful. I'm sure that's not true.
No, they can fix that.
Can I?
Then
can
they
I
give testosterone?
Can I tell you the most upsetting thing?
Have you heard of sex dust?
No, but thank you for that.
Look it up.
Sex testosterone.
Dust. I'm starting to get ads on my Words with Friends saying, "Is sex painful? Menopause is real," and I'm like, whoever is listening in on my
it's weird, isn't it?
Thoughts, I don't want
these
weird.
Ones. Yeah, it's weird how they seem to zero in on you and bring stuff up. Yeah, how did you know that?
But I,
so no competition. Stop seeing your next door neighbor as a competitor or their coworker as a competitor. That's critical.
Yes, right? And see how you can.
Because you'll look petty.
But
in
how
that
can,
and it backfires.
Later,
the
it
ultimate
backfires.
People. Win-win is always the way to look at things. Like, how can I benefit somebody else and also
and
drive
like,
some benefit as well?
My friend Joe Polish, who you will love, who I work with a lot, and he's working in recovery, is life gives to the giver and takes from the taker. And I think that is just, it's a cliche,
really?
But it's
Trump's
so true.
President of the United States. How does that philosophy work?
There
out?
Are exceptions. But I will say, misery is its own hell. That is not a happy man. Like, I want to be happy more than I want to be president or successful.
That's interesting.
That's interesting.
Well, and I think that's the other thing.
I don't think happiness crosses his mind.
No.
Right?
Right. I don't think so. It crosses my mind a lot.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse
and by
me.
Happiness, what do you mean by happiness?
It's a great question. I think it is understanding that nothing outside of me is ever going to fulfill me.
That's a Cubby thing.
But that's the truth.
Heard that from Cubby.
I didn't. I've never heard him speak. He was around right when I got sober.
He was right there. Every Sunday you saw
him. He was at Sundowners a lot. That's
right.
True.
So Cubby, great writer, Hubert Selby Jr., was this Buddha, Zen Buddhist of 12-step world, right? Okay. He passed away about 4 years ago. Huh. He says this thing. I see him speak, and he says this thing. There's nothing that I've realized. What sobriety has really done for me is made me realize that there's nothing I want that I don't already have. Mm. And I was just like 2 years sober. I'm like, because I want a lot of shit. I don't know what that means.
At Millie's.
So I'm at lunch with him about 3 weeks later. I go, Cubby, you said something about there's nothing you want that you don't already have. Is that the feelings involved in attachment? And he goes, no, nah. And I was like, what is it that you're describing? So do you just realize that it's wholeness or abundance or whatever that you're wanting by getting this gal or this house or that you're talking about? And he goes, no. And I said, well, what is it? And he goes, for you to figure out, Robert.
Uh-oh.
For you to figure out, Robert.
Uh-oh. Look,
I love stuff like that.
And what did you finally decide?
Still figuring out.
That that I think we're all chasing our own tail with material wealth, and it's family and our children and our friends.
The really
that
important
matter.
Things. I mean, the fire.
And what house you live in, you're not going to remember.
Well,
that's another thing that I learned from another mentor of mine, which is he has this amazing house. And one time I said to him, "What's it like to own this house?" And he goes, I can't think like that. I just think like it was built by this one guy. Then I bought it from this other guy who got it from him. Mm. I'm responsible for it now. And the house itself is the magnificence. Mm. And the house will be owned by somebody else when I'm dead and gone.
Wow.
That, I started to think it's people that matter. It's who lives in the house that matters.
Okay. Yeah. So let's take it.
I think America has forgotten that it's who lives in the house that matters.
Absolutely agree.
Good
the relationships have become. We need a new American myth where relationships take center stage, I think.
Yes.
But let's get back to the millennial who's the one suffering.
No, but
because
let's
they don't
talk
have
about the next generation.
Finish
he
that,
was talking
yeah,
about
yeah.
Generation Z or whatever they're called.
Well, he asked
they're
about that.
They're way better.
I think they are
better. They stopped
better.
Giving the ribbons out.
I think
and you're
better.
Seeing the repercussions. The 17, 18, 19-year-olds are amazing.
I think. We haven't really seen them yet. But so how, if you were to coach that kid.
Okay. If we had to break down his question to one thing, what was it?
Let's see here. Kind of running out of time.
Okay.
And we're getting into the good stuff with you.
Okay, good. I like that. I did want to say one thing about happiness.
Yes, please.
That I believe it's that Buddhist idea of equanimity, which is that you don't attach to you don't attach to pleasure and you don't run from pain and you just try to kind of be in the soup of it.
I'm going to print out this whole thing so you can read it.
It's not a biological fact.
Not my thing.
It's not your thing.
I agree. You like pleasure. No, I think pleasure should not be a major consideration in happiness. I've said this before. There's hedonic happiness, mm-hmm. which is pleasure, and you were perfectly happy when you were slamming heroin. Sometimes, right?
I
wouldn't call that happiness.
Right.
So for me, happiness is more about
it's more about fulfillment,
fulfillment, and living a certain kind of life and a good life, a meaningful life, and satisfaction, thriving, flourishing, those sorts of things.
I think that's
my view of happiness.
Yeah.
But to do that stuff. It takes energy. You have to attach to things. You know what I mean? So not attaching to stuff like
not clinging, okay. Not craving.
Sense
not
of identity.
Yeah.
Sense of identity.
Listen, let's put it
that.
This way. Lots of good lives were not very happy or not very pleasurable a lot of the time. Would Jesus lead a good life?
Right.
Not very pleasurable a lot of times.
Seneca, woman,
good life?
I saw this woman
not
yelling.
Very pleasure when they cut his hands off.
I saw
off.
This woman with a Jesus, like obviously devout Christian bumper stickers, yelling at the parking attendant at Knott's Berry Farm the other day.
Perfect.
It was the craziest thing ever.
That's like, I remember at my first meeting, somebody telling me they keep an AA bumper sticker so that they won't give people the finger while driving. Because they don't want to be that one example.
Good.
I pull up by her and I go, is that lady yelling at you? And she said, yeah, I get it all the time.
Okay, so any last website again?
To get Party Girl, go to partygirlaudio.com. By the way, if you are not an Audible subscriber, it's free.
Ooh.
And by the way, if people are interested in having Light Hustler write and publish your books, you can go to lighthustlerpublishing.com. We'll take more books besides yours.
I was going to say, Bob and Drew will be there.
Yeah, Light Hustler Publishing.
Let's do
international
it.
Bestsellers.
Do you have like contracts there and everything?
Oh, don't ask like that. Of course we do.
Yeah, so
we're super legit.
Like LegalZoom, you got LegalZoom attachment.
No, we got real lawyers.
Sign us
down.
Up. Sign us up.
Yeah,
let's do it.
I got
okay.
my will on LegalZoom. It's all right.
All right, buddy.
You live, everybody.
You live. We'll see you next time. All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBC, being Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Sing One I Do By Myself, the Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob, Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, Dairy W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at drdrew.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.